Hello and welcome to Building Your T-Shirt Empire. My name is Cole and with me as always is Gavin. Today we have a super exciting guest. It's Jeremy Parker from swag.com. He has an incredible story of selling his business to Custom Ink, and not only that, but now launching a whole new business underneath the umbrella. So it's an amazing guest and he is like the definition of succeeding in this industry. Jeremy, say hello to the people and let them know kind of the basic rundown of what it is you've done in the industry.
Awesome. Well, great to be here, Cole and Gavin. Great to meet you guys. And sorry for the delay, the tech hiccups. I've been in the industry for a pretty long time. My first job out of college, even before I graduated college, I was a documentary filmmaker. So I thought that was going to be my passion. I was all about it. In 2006, my documentary won the Vail Film Festival. So I remember I was on the top of the mountain in Vail, Colorado, and half the room were these amazing, you know, actors and famous people that we've all heard of, and half the room were more struggling artists. And I asked myself an internal question. Number one, do I love what I'm doing? And number two, am I that good at it? And honestly, both answers were no. And I had this like immediate realization that maybe filmmaking is not the long-term career path for me. So what do you do when you get a film? T-shirts. So I thought I would start a t-shirt company, and not because I love t-shirts, honestly. It was just, I thought I would learn the ins and the outs of starting a business. I didn't know anything. I was an artist, you know, I was a filmmaker. So I thought starting a t-shirt company would teach me about manufacturing and production and PR and marketing and how to build a website. And as you can imagine, this is like pre-Shopify days. It wasn't as easy to start something. You had to really build it and program it. And I did that for about 2 years. Now, I launched the t-shirt company. It was a high-end t-shirt company, $300 t-shirts, if you can imagine. Really high-end, exclusive, limited edition, world-famous artist designing it. And we launched it in 2007. Now, I don't know if your audience remembers, 2007 is when the recession happened. And as you can imagine, people are not really buying $200, $300 t-shirts. So I came up with this market-related pricing model. It's gimmicky at the time, even gimmicky more now. But basically the idea is this. If every time somebody buys a t-shirt on my website, they're given the price of the Dow Jones. And for every 100 points the Dow dropped, they would get a discount on their t-shirt price. And we had some people buying stuff and being like, you know, okay, if the Dow drops, let me get it. It was kind of like a gimmicky thing, but it started to work a little bit. And I wrote to Mark Cuban, who early on was like my inspiration as being an entrepreneur. And he had a blog called Blog Maverick. And I told him about my idea. And he wrote about me literally within 10 minutes. He responded, Jeremy, do you mind if I write about you in my blog? I said, great, go for it. He wrote about me. It got seen by At Age, which is a marketing magazine. And that got ultimately seen. It's a long-winded story, but it ultimately got seen by this guy, Elliot Pizer. And Elliot Pizer is the CEO of MV Sport. I don't know how familiar you are with MV Sport. They're a very large company, frankly, in the promotional product space. If you walk into a college campus and you go into the bookstore, there's like Nike, Under Armour, Adidas, and MV Sport. It's one of these brands that not everyone's heard of, but they're really, really big. They have like all the licensing to all major universities, you know, minor league sports teams are really big. And I hit it off with Elliot. And I started to frankly learn about the promotional product space when I was 22 years old. And what I learned, honestly, is that the industry was insanely fragmented. It was broken. It was old. The buyer was 40 to 50 year old office manager, marketing teams. They like doing things with hand to hand. They like seeing products in person. They like looking through a huge catalog. And even at the time when I was 22 years old, it kind of struck me as a little bit outdated. But I said, maybe, you know, this is the buyer. You know, who knows? Maybe they like it doing it this way. Fast forward a couple of years, I started a company called Tipped Media. We basically became one of the first, if not the first, product placement company for YouTube videos. So right now, everybody go on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. I mean, this is like right when Twitter was starting. TikTok didn't even exist. People were not making money on social media. People were making millions of views in their parents' basement, but not getting paid for it. And our idea was very simple. What if we got these big brands like State Farm, Colgate, Verizon into the YouTube stars video and frankly made them a lot of money? And we started doing that. We getting all these big name brands partnering up with these YouTube stars and representing these YouTube stars and making them all a lot of money. That company was ultimately acquired by this guy, Bob Silerman, who's the creator of Live Nation, Ticketmaster. He had a publicly traded company. And I was 25 years old at the time. Wow. After that high of selling a company, I had a big failure. I started a social media company called Vouch. It was basically you vouch for your favorite things. And I think the idea right now could work, but I don't think we built the right solution for it. So basically the high level idea, Facebook, is the biggest platform, everyone was taking a bit and piece of Facebook and making a dedicated experience around it, right? Like Twitter took the status update and made it just about that. And Instagram took the pictures and made a dedicated experience about that. We wanted to take the like button, which is the most monetizable aspect of Facebook, and make a dedicated experience right that. So I could follow you, Cole, and you, Gavin, and you can vouch for your favorite things. And I can see Gavin, I really trust with movie recommendations. I'm going to follow Gavin for movies. I'm going to follow you, Cole, for books, et cetera. And you could follow your friends. You could follow celebrities. And we had about 100,000 users, a little bit more. But for social media, you really needed to be massive for you to start monetizing it. And we never could crack the code to make it like an everyday thing that people had to vouch for. Just like they have an Instagram and Twitter, they posting nonstop. We couldn't really crack that code. After that, burned through several million dollars worth of funding, spent 3 years doing that. I always kept following the promo space for my early career at MV Sport. And I figured the next business I start, I just want to start a business that I could control my destiny and make money and not feel the pressure of having to raise money or do any of these things. And I felt like the buyer for swag industry was changing. That was like the key insight. The buyer was a much younger buyer. It was a millennial. It was Gen Z. It was the first job out of college. And they're given this budget from Facebook and saying, hey, here's $10,000 to spend from Facebook. Go for it. And there was no brand that was out there that was really appealing to today's buyer. So I want to really learn as much as I could, dove right in, spoke to as many people as I could, and really try to build this go-to platform for swag. And over the last 8 years, we've become the fastest growing company for swag production, going from 300,000 to 1.1 million, to 3 million, to 7 million, to 15 million, to 30 million, really scaling every single year over 100%. And in 2021, we were acquired by Custom Inc. And so the last 2 years, I've been the CEO of swag.com underneath Custom Inc. And a couple of months ago, I left to start a new division under Custom Inc. called Swag Space that we could get to into a bit. But I know a long-winded story, but there's a lot of ups and twists to kind of get me to where I am today at this point.
That's really incredible. Like, tell me a little bit more about those years before you were acquired at swag.com. Like, what do you attribute the most to that growth? Mm-hmm. There's so many shops that are, you know, they're a screen printing shop or they're a promotional company and they get to $2 million and they are there for 10 years straight. They're just completely flatline. They can pay their bills, they can pay their payroll, but they're not growing. And it sounds like you were doubling, tripling yearly. What do you think that growth was mostly attributed to? Was it web design or was it something else?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things, but I think what I've learned from early on in my career and some successes and some failures, that you can always focus on the same thing that you think is working. Like a lot of these screen print shops, maybe they're doing the same thing to get them to 2 million. So they think, well, I have to do the same exact thing every year to get to that 2 million. They're not really breaking their mindset of what could be done. So for example, early days of swag.com, we had no money, right? We didn't have anything. So how did I get sales? It was knocking on doors. I literally, with my co-founder Josh, would go to a WeWork office and walk up and down the hallway and really knock on every single door and say, hey, who buys swag? A lot of people shut their door in the face. A lot of people say we don't buy swag. A lot of people said whatever. Some people gave us the time and had conversations with us. So we were able to learn the right solution to build. And in that learning, we were actually making sales. So that was all we had at that point. You know, we would show up at offices and make sales. But that's not scalable. That's not something you could do forever. By the second year, we had the 350,000 doing that hand-to-hand combat traveling sales. But how do you go from 350,000 to the next year doing 1.1 million? So in that first year, we learned the right solution to build, at least what we thought the right solution to build is. And we started build the right first version of the e-commerce site. And as you can imagine, the e-commerce site today is infinitely better than the e-commerce site was in our first year of business. But it was still allowing people to transact in a very rudimentary way. And when we launched it, we realized, well, we're not going to hand-to-hand combat this to 1.1 million, right? Because you have to have goals. We said, let's start doing Google ads, right? Google ads are very expensive, but we felt like it would give us enough of a lead gen for us to learn more. So every single thing that we spent on and time did in marketing also had to have the ability to teach us what was the right solution to build. So we spent all the money we made in that first year of 350,000 back into Google marketing, right? And then we started driving more traffic. It wasn't economically sound to keep investing in Google because we didn't have the numbers weren't perfect. Like we weren't making the perfect margin. We were so small. We had very little buying power, but it gave us enough to get that learning. Then once we learned enough and we still refining the platform and making it better, then we literally shut off Google marketing and went straight to SEO, content marketing. Like every single time you have to go all in on one thing. That's from my experience. Mm-hmm. Everyone always now, listen, at this point, we're 8 years in, we're doing Google, we're doing ads, we're doing partnerships, but we're big enough. Our team can handle it. But early on, I found that there's always one traction channel, as we like to think of it, that really will outpace all the other traction channels. And a lot of people try to do too much and they're never fully focused. And we felt like we have to be fully focused. So we went all in on content marketing. If you Google swag ideas, right? People are looking for swag ideas. We come up the first in Google rankings. That one article has probably driven over $2 million. I mean, you have to think about certain, there's certain traction channels that are not necessarily expensive, but that teach you a lot. And we were putting out thousands of articles and we would see which ones would be clicked on. Then we realized from that, it wasn't just the marketing gaining traction. It was about learning what are people actually looking for. So we could take that information and then drive Google ads and paid ads based on content that people actually would click on. Like, so every single thing we're doing was basically teaching other aspects of the business and how to make us better. That makes sense.
Wow. So, I mean, with that content marketing, I mean, I think a lot of it was probably contributed to the really good purchase of your domain name. Going back to that domain name, because I know that a great domain name that is already a keyword search puts you ahead of the race. I'm just wondering, can you tell us how much you paid for swag.com?
Yeah, sure. I'll tell you. It's kind of a crazy story. So swag.com was asking, I think, about 1.1 or 1.2 million at the time when we bought it. And I had no money, so that wasn't going to work for me. Yeah. But buying swag.com was more important for me about the branding than the SEO. Honestly, I didn't care about the SEO value. At least at the time, I didn't really know that much about SEO. It wasn't like the first thing. The whole point of swag.com is very simple. It's not a pair of shoes, right? When you're browsing Facebook and Instagram, you see a cool pair of shoes, it's an impulse purchase. You buy it because it looks cool. You're not going to be browsing Facebook and Google and seeing a swag ad and being, oh, I'm going to buy $10,000 for my company. It just doesn't happen. It's not something that people need exactly. I mean, maybe they need it, but most likely when you get in front of them with an ad, they're not realistically going to place the order. Right. It's just not going to happen. So what you need to do, at least in my opinion, you need to turn offline conversations to online purchasing. So Cole, I get in front of you with an ad in January. You might not be buying to November, but the name swag.com, you remember it. And then when you're talking to Gavin, you're saying, Gavin, we need to buy some swag for the show. Oh, I saw swag.com. Type it directly into the browser. Yeah. I wanted people to have that mindset. It's kind of like Kleenex when people say, you know, tissues. Like, you want to be a brand synonymous with what the actual thing that is. And it turns these offline conversations to online purchasing. And that's what we had. We have 50% of our traffic going directly to the browser. Swag.com. It's like Amazon. Like, no one Googles the best place to buy everything. They type into the browser, Amazon. They don't, you know, say, I want to look for the best search engine to find stuff that I'm looking for. No one does that. They go Google.com. We wanted that mindset to be the same thing with swag and turn that on. So that was kind of we needed it. It was very important for the success of the business and to break through the noise. Okay, that's the first thing. How do we get it? So I made the guy an offer, about $200,000. Basically, it was kind of complicated. But basically, ultimately, what happened is we worked out a deal with the owner of the domain name where we would basically owe him. We negotiated the price down to $200,000. I didn't have that either. We negotiated the price down and basically said, I'll give you a small piece of the company. And I will promise to buy the domain name within a 2-year period. So from day one, I was able to use the domain name for that small equity. Worst comes to worst, the company failed. He got his domain name back. No skin off anyone's back. Best case scenario, he would get paid the $200,000 plus you have some equity in our company, which is what we did. Wow. About 6 months in, we were able to make enough sales in the $350,000 to take the money and just buy the domain out fully from this person.
Wow. And I'm assuming he hadn't done much with it. He had just, he had been like a smart guy buying domain names in hopes that he could flip them.
Exactly right. He made way more money doing this deal than if we just paid the price initially.
Yeah.
But for us, it worked out because we didn't have the money. So it's kind of like this catch 22.
You had to. Yeah.
You had to. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, okay. So you get swag.com. It's growing exponentially. Mm-hmm. And then you get a call from Custom Inc. And how did that go? Like, how is it that you get acquired on that level? How do those meetings start to take place? Like, what is the entire experience of that corporate acquisition like?
Yeah, it's a great question. We weren't really thinking about selling ever. I mean, we were growing. We went from 7 million to 15 million. Oh, wow. I'm trying to think, when did they reach out to us? I think they reached out to us when we were just finished doing 7 million. So we were coming off of 1 million to 3 million to 7 million. We were growing 100%.
How fast was that?
We got connected to Custom Inc. some of the people within the company, more of like the corporate buying, or, you know, they have a whole like M&A team, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it was more of just conversation. It's just like getting to know people in the industry. It wasn't initially started off like, we want to buy you. I don't even think they thought that. They just wanted to kind of know, who are the new players in town, right? Who are the guys doing, making some waves? And we were, you know, getting written up in some presses, and people, you know, were kind of discovering us a little bit. But we're still very small, doing about 7 million. And we had a great conversation. And then what happened is, I think we're supposed to go out to meet them in Fairfax, Virginia. Nothing about acquisition, more just about like connecting to people in the industry. And COVID hit. This is like March of 2020. So at that point, everything was canceled. Like no meeting, didn't talk to them for 7-8 months. And we just kept our head down and grinding and growing. And we actually went from 7 million in the year of COVID to over 15 million. Now, the industry was down insane amounts. Like everybody was down. Everyone was hiding in a bunker. And my thinking was, if everyone's hiding, this is the actual opportunity for us to jump over our competition. That was my mentality. And it was scary because if you can imagine, there's no trade shows, there's no events, no one's in the office. All the reasons why people buy swag, they didn't really need to buy swag now. So how are we going to grow from 7 million to 15 million? Now, January, February, and the early part of March, we were on pace to double, right? The 7 million. We're on pace to do 14 million. March, COVID hits, our sales drop. April, drop. May, drop. I mean, our sales were like nothing. Some days we walked in, we had literally no sales for several days in a row. It was bad. It was impossible. We had to, you know, cut team salaries, cut our own salaries. Like it was to stay afloat. It was very, very tough. But we realized something was kind of magical. We realized that if everyone is disconnected, right? Companies still want to keep that company culture thriving even when no one's in the office. So how do you do that? If everyone is designed, if every platform from 4imprint to whoever, from Custom Ink, everyone's designed to buy swag and then swag is sent to one address. What if we became the platform to allow people to buy swag and then individually distribute that swag to all their remote employees, to their best customers, to leads? Mm-hmm. So we built out this insanely robust platform that when people go through our checkout flow, they're given two options. Send to one address, it's a regular e-commerce experience. Click a button, deliver it to multiple addresses. When they do that, all the swag gets sent to a 3PL for warehousing and distribution. The customer can upload their CSV file. It calculates the shipping address, all the information. They pay for it. Now we're globally shipping things all over the world. This became like the de facto way that companies could keep that culture thriving. And no one else had it. So we became like the de facto spot to go to for individual distribution. They came back to us after November or December of 2020. Wanted to see how we're doing. And when we told them, they were kind of like, wow, this is unbelievable. Because everyone was down and we were up like big time. Wow. Kept that conversation going. Weren't positive about selling. But after getting to know the guys at Custom Ink and the girls, they're amazing people. And they had a very similar vision to us. You know, we were just doing things a little bit faster and a little bit newer. But they worked through so many things for the last 25 plus years. Like they figured out a lot of things that were kind of difficult for us to figure out, that we were actively trying to figure out in that moment, and they already had answers to it. And it felt like, what if we just combined the efforts? Like what if an order happened on Custom Ink or swag.com and it hit the same backend, and we were able to operationalize all of the inefficiencies that we were having, and we're able to have bigger buying power instantaneously and able to have better shipping rates instantaneously? How much more profitable could we be if we were doing it together? So in November of 2021, we were officially acquired, but as you can imagine, it takes a long time to negotiate and go through the process.
That's amazing. If you don't, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you? I'm just curious.
I look young, but I'm actually 38.
Okay. Well, you're still
pretty young considering how much you've accomplished.
Yeah, that's still young. That's incredible. Now, for your track record, you've accomplished a lot.
Thank you.
You mentioned a couple of things, like I don't know, my ear picked this up when you mentioned you focus on one marketing channel.
Yeah.
And I just remember reading this book that's called Traction that talks about the 19 marketing channel. Mm-hmm. Was that one of the things that you used when you was deciding that? I'm not sure.
It was definitely a book that I read, and it was definitely in the back of my head. It was also just failures. You know, sometimes I didn't do what I did this time. You know, with Vouch, I did a lot of the wrong things across the board. It wasn't even just marketing. It was everything. You know, my biggest mistake, and I could, I guess, tell your audience, and this will maybe save them years and suffering. Yeah. Every entrepreneur has some sort of ego, at least some sort. You think of yourself as knowing the right answers. And oftentimes that ego could get in the way of building the right solution because you're not necessarily open to people's feedback. with Vouch, I could know exactly what went wrong. By the way, if I started Vouch today, I think we could actually be successful. I do, because I would build the right solution, and I don't necessarily have the right solution. I would go out and talk to customers and learn what the right solution was for them, and build the right solution for them. With Vouch, we spent over a year building a platform, this mobile app for vouching for your favorite things. And I lost sleep over every little detail. Legitimately, I would be like, what happens when you press this button or that, or what color should this be, or what shadow should it be? And how I was like obsessed. I was obsessive with every little detail. And once we launched it, all the stuff that I lost sleep over that I cared about, nobody cared about. None of the customers actually cared about those things. It was these other 20 things I didn't even think about. Those were the things that they actually wanted. If I could get out of my own way and build the right solution from day one, we would have way more budget to actually survive and allow us to thrive. Mm-hmm. So with swag.com, when I started, I said, I don't have to know the right answer. I'm just going to start and learn from the customers and build the right solution. By the way, in that first 60 days of starting Swag was the biggest pivotal learning that I learned that basically, I think, changed the trajectory of the business. In the initial days, I thought we should go after the marketing team. That was my initial idea. Let's go after the marketing teams. Why? Because the marketing teams have the biggest budget, right? You have a 10-person company and they could be buying for 1,000 customers. They could be buying for 3,000 leads. It's unlimited what they could be buying for. It doesn't matter how big of a company they are, right? They're going to spend it if it's actually a return on the investment. Great. But when I was speaking to all these marketing managers, and I did that by knocking on doors and going to LinkedIn and looking at marketing managers in New York City and reaching out to them and getting on the phone with them, I realized that everyone's going after the marketing teams, everyone. So how am I going to differentiate myself from the 23,000 other players who are all going after them? And when I realized it was actually the office manager at the company who I should be going after. No one thinks about that. And no one was going after them at that point. Now everyone's been copying us and that's become a thing. But why the office manager? Okay. Office manager is only buying for the internal company. So if it's a 10-person company, they have a fairly small budget. If it's a 100-person company, it's a little bit bigger. 1,000-person company, they're buying it a little bigger. It doesn't really matter. But what they're doing is they're introducing our product in the hands of all the different potential buyers within the organization. Imagine you sell to a startup that has 100 employees. Now every one of those 100 employees has a t-shirt that says powered by swag.com, or our tagline at the time was swag.com, we made this. Right? So this office manager buys 100 t-shirts. She gives it out to the marketing team and the sales team and the London office and the HR team. They're all getting the high quality swag. They see the print. They feel it in real time. Who made this? Swag.com. Wow. Maybe we should use swag.com for our marketing efforts. And it basically became this Trojan horse to get in the company. And no one was going after that office manager. It was like amazing. Every time we did an ad, we would always come up first. Every time we wrote content for SEO marketing, we were coming on searches and no other swag company was even close to competing with us on the first page of swag for certain things. So you have to get out of your own way, have conversations with people and learn from them. And ultimately, in my opinion, you'll end up building the right thing. And it might not be the right thing that you thought initially.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that you did pretty much all of this. It's all outsourced production, right? Or did you have a production facility?
Everything's outsourced. Yeah, we have no in-house at all.
So when you had, this is the thing that I see fairly successful print shops, you know, even going up to maybe 5 million plus, they normally sell themselves on like, look at our facility, look at how professional we are, look at how clean the final print is. But it's kind of all about their skills and their structure. And it's like them telling their local story normally. And it sounds like with you, you guys were like, here is a great product. You don't need to know how we get it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it will show up on time and it'll look incredible. So when you were creating those marketing strategies, was there just a huge focus on like product photography and design?
Exactly.
Because you're not going to be bragging about your print quality. You're essentially just like, here is a ultimate product at the end of the day.
Exactly right. It was a brand story. So our big thing in the beginning was we have to be curated. For not only because we wanted to only offer products that were high quality and that people actually want to keep, but also the story of it. You know, when millennials go shopping and you go onto a company's website and there's 1,000 mugs, how do they know it's good? Most of the stuff's not good. They're going to buy one of these 1,000 mugs and they're going to be disappointed. And if they end up not buying because they might be paralyzed by too many choices, like how can you choose if you're given the same mug over and over again? That's how every site when we started was done. I think things have changed a little bit, but in the beginning, it's not a long time ago. This is 2016. This is like 8-9 years ago, right? That's what it was. Every site had thousands upon thousands of products. It was overwhelming. We changed the structure of our e-commerce site very simply. We tested all the products. Literally, me and my co-founder Josh would buy samples, and we would have it on the pool table room. We had a we worked out of his apartment building, and the pool table. We had no office in the beginning, and we buy all these samples and we test out all the samples. And legitimately, 99% of the samples we tested didn't make the cut. So that was what we went off of. Like, we curate the highest quality products, products that you will be proud to show off, that your customers will be proud to buy. All these different things, because to us, there's nothing worse than buying swag that ends up in the trash, right? It costs your company money and it tarnishes your brand. It's not good for the environment. It's all the negative things. But if something's actually amazing and high quality, they'll keep it for years. They'll become an evangelist and they'll ultimately become, you know, shouting your name from the rooftops. So that was kind of our idea of only quality. That was the first thing. The second thing is we have to build an experience that was better than any other e-commerce experience. So our site, when you upload the logo on our site, our system detects how many colors are in the logo in the nearest Pantone match. Now, how do you convert web-based images to Pantone? It's impossible. But we've developed some things that really got it as close to as possible. And then when customers like Facebook check out, they could override the Pantone that we detected. They could say, oh, I know exactly my Pantone. It's not exactly right. But for clients who don't even know their Pantone, because not every client does, they could just go with our Pantone that we discovered. Like every aspect, we said, where's the challenge? How do we resolve it? If people upload low-res logos, instead of getting them to convert the low-res to high-res, our team will convert the low-res to high-res for free. We remove all of the friction. We streamline everything. And then we added services like you could build fully custom kitted boxes, right? You want to do like a welcome kit for your onboarding new hires. Instead of buying it from five different locations, going to a 3PL, consolidating it, buying it from a box vendor, packaging up things themselves, all you got to do is with our site – buy the products, click on a few buttons, 30 seconds, you have everything kitted into a box, checkout, hits our back, and we handle it all. We streamline every little aspect that used to be complicated and now is more streamlined. So if you combined everything with a great brand, great user experience, great product offering, it makes a compelling offering that you don't necessarily have to print anything. You just have to tell the story that you're working with the best suppliers and give them the confidence that you're doing that.
So Jeremy, I'm just curious. So you really swag.com is a tech company, right?
Yep.
That's are do you have a tech background? Are you a developer or
no, not like, at all. But I've been an entrepreneur since I was 22 years old.
How'd you end up solving that piece of the puzzle?
Yeah, I'm somewhat of a designer. And I just not by trade, I was a filmmaker, but I've learned to be a user experience and really focus on like experiences and telling stories and branding. So I led with that, you know, every single thing in terms of technology and what we build, I first designed it like really high fidelity designs. So if I was giving you a demo of Swag Space, you would be able to visualize it even before we have anything built. And I would tell the story to the developers and make it very easy for them to understand exactly what to build. So when they build it, it's more about like a lot of developers are tinkering things or there's like these wireframes, as they call it, you know, paper designs, and you send it to a developer and they have to kind of fill the gaps of what they think. That didn't really exist with how I did things. I designed everything so fully, like as if it was a completed site. Like I just saw what the vision is and then I work with the tech team to build the exact vision. So it just, I didn't really need a tech background, if that makes sense. Like they were just following a blueprint.
Do you mind telling us ballpark what you've spent on the development of the software over the, you know, almost a decade?
Imagine over the years, literally every single thing that we made in profit, we reinvested back into tech. So I would say probably north of $10 million at this point. I mean, like a lot of money. And every month we're not just stopping and saying, hey, this is the platform and we're done. We're constantly making things better and better and better. When you do numbers of 40, 50, 60, $100 million of revenue, like spending a couple of million dollars to streamline things and make that things that more efficient and more scalable is totally worth it. And then when I obviously get into Swag Space, I'll give you, I guess, a brief rundown of where I am in terms of Swag Space. So after we sold in 2021, November, I was the CEO of swag.com up until December of last year. I've had this idea for Swag Space ever since 2016 when I was starting swag.com. So what is Swag Space? We want to become the universal swag platform. So early days when I was knocking on doors at WeWorks and I was being a traveling salesman, I was doing it to learn, but I was doing it also because I had no technical experience. We had no platform to actually make sales in the early days. This is pre-building anything. And I realized in those early days, I used to spend about 20% of my day on selling, right? Going to doors and making phone calls and going on LinkedIn, and about 80% of my day on, frankly, the bullshit. like collecting money from customers, collecting sales tax, remitting sales tax, creating presentation decks manually, buying stuff from one place, shipping it to another place, buying notebooks from here, water bottles from here. I mean, then after you actually get the order in, to maintain the relationships with all these different suppliers who are at different production timelines, it was the biggest headache, and it was such an insane thing. But that's how the business is run. And every single thing that we built over the last 8 years and millions of dollars spent has been to automate that entire process. Now, we're in, 2024? The industry is still run the same way it was running in 2016 when I was doing it manually. That's how the industry is run. 95%+ of the industry is still doing things, presentation decks, back and forth emails, quotes. Hey, I want 100 of these. Oh, there's not a stock of these. Let me get you a like t-shirt. Oh, you don't like this one? Going back and forth. There's so many processes that are human connected and are manual. And we've streamlined all of it. We've made the process really simple. So then my thinking was, well, now that we're part of Custom Ink and we have this amazing tech platform that we've streamlined everything, and we have the buying power now of Custom Ink that's doing $600+ million of revenue every year, right? What if we allowed our technology to be white labeled and given for free to every single person that wants to sell swag? So who wants to sell swag? Obviously, promo distributors want to sell swag. This will make their life infinitely easier. Screen printers, they sell apparel. You guys sell apparel. You might want to sell some hard goods. Why not? The same buyer that's buying notebooks and t-shirts and water bottles is buying t-shirts, right? So let's sell hard goods. There's designers. Imagine you're a graphic designer and you create a logo for somebody. That person takes that logo and goes to a custom maker, goes to swag.com or goes to somebody else. Why don't you handle the swag for them and make a heavy commission on it? There's party planners. There's the local stay-at-home mom or dad that has a charity in their neighborhood and they want to sell $5,000 to and make 30% top line. Anybody could sell swag instantaneously and for free with Swagspace. That's the idea. It's really to democratize the technology that we built and allow you to make more money because our buying power is so significant. We could take our piece of the order and still give you more profit than you would make elsewhere. That's kind of the beauty of it. And we launched January 15th. We have over 100 users so far. We're not looking to have more than 150 in the first year because we really want to refine the experience, learn from our customers, keep developing and building. I mean, I'll even tell you, we launched this past week some features that were like every single thing we're building is needed by our customers. So I'll give you an example. A lot of our Swagspace customers, the domain was like Jenny Promo, which is the name of the screen printer or party planner or whatever, jennypromo.swag.space. And some people are okay with that because it looks like a subdomain, right? Imagine you go to jennypromo.com and there's a button on the top of jennypromo.com that says shop swag and you click on it and it opens up jennypromo.swag.space. A lot of people are fine with that. It looks like a subdomain. It doesn't look like they're leaving their site at all. But a lot of our customers said, no, I want it to be jennypromo.com/swag. I want it to be fully white labeled, nothing to do with Swagspace. So we just launched yesterday the ability to actually have your own domain override the swag.space. So now it's fully white labeled. We've had people who say, hey, I don't even have a landing page. And we have to say to them, hey, go on to Wix, go on to Shopify, go on to Squarespace, create a landing page. And they have no technical ability. So what we built is actually a homepage template. So now on our site, you can launch your homepage. You can launch your site. You can override the site with your exact domain name. It's fully white labelable and free and customizable. Instantaneously and for free, you can have your entire site launched today, literally in seconds, by just uploading your logo and your brand color, instantaneously press the button. So these are the things that we're trying to develop, and we're only going to learn that if we really have these conversations with our early customers. And having too many inputs early on, I think for me, it's just not worth it. You know, like let's refine the experience so that next year we can really scale this and open this up to a lot more people.
Wow. And so I don't want to get too far into the weeds because maybe we can do like an offline discussion with one of your sales guys.
Yeah.
Because I'm interested. we have overhead. We have staff. Mm-hmm. Like I have an overhead of $30,000 a month or something.
Yep.
And so if I were to 100% switch to this platform, what would happen is I would basically fire everyone, shut down my lease, and then just become essentially like a middleman in some ways, feeding all the jobs through your orders. What do you say to people who have a good amount of infrastructure of their own?
Yep.
And how is it that they can use this platform with their own infrastructure and it not be like a weird, segmented thing where it's like, oh, you can buy only screen printing on this side, and then you can buy all promo on this side. Do you have a solution coming for that?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So for right now, exactly what you said, if somebody buys a t-shirt through the Swagspace platform, we have over 7,000 products in the catalog and we're constantly adding more products. If you buy a t-shirt, it will go to the custom ink decorator network and we'll handle it for you. So we've got a lot of screen printers. So that's great for designers and party planners and promo distributors who don't have their own in-house printing. But for screen printers who do their own in-house printing, it's kind of a weird thing to kind of farm it out to another network. So we get that. So we say to screen printers right now, if you don't want to offer apparel because it's not going to be going to you, just disable apparel. There's like a little toggle in the back end that we built. So you turn off apparel, then you have a site that's only hard goods and you can deal your apparel how you currently deal with apparel. But if your clients come to you and they want t-shirts, you can now have an upsell for them and say, hey, by the way, we just launched this new site. Would you want notebooks, water bottles, mugs, etc.? Yes, most people who are buying t-shirts do want those other things. Send them the link. They can now check out. Don't have to do any of the work. We handle it for you. In about 6 months from now, we are still developing this. We don't want to put promises, but we're trying to develop it where you will then be able to turn on apparel if you want to. And every time somebody orders an apparel from your site, it will get funneled to you as a screen printer to handle your own printing. So every screen printer who becomes a Swag Space member can add themselves as a de facto apparel or embroiderer, et cetera, in the back end. So every type of product that gets bought on the site that has those kind of embellishment methods will be sent to you. And everything that gets bought, you know, that are hard goods that you don't necessarily do the printing for, will get sent to our network of printers to handle. So there's all these kind of different ways that you could kind of slice and dice it. Yeah. But your point, Colt, early on is a valid one. You know, if you have $30,000 of costs a month, theoretically, I don't want to say fire anybody, but you won't have those costs if you allow the platform to do its work. Like, we handle all of it. So we've had people who set up a separate business line and test it out. We've had people who take that budget of $30,000, let's say, and move it to make them salespeople, because let them be revenue generating employees versus operational. Because you can replace all your operations with this. We become your de facto operation powerhouse backend. You can have all that extra money to focus on selling, which will hopefully get you even more revenue and allow that beautiful cycle to keep going. So that's people have done that. We've had companies that are really, I can't say their name, but very large companies in the promo space that everything is manual, and they have, you know, they're doing hundreds of millions of dollars plus. They want our technology for some of the orders that they would typically turn away. Like, they're more complicated. They're boxes, they're kitting, they're warehousing. It's stuff that doesn't make sense for them, that they typically turn away if it's under $100,000 customer, because that's just how their model's set up. Now they're able to make these sub $100,000 orders through the platform, where the platform does all the work. And they believe they're going to make an extra $6 million of profit at the end of the year. So profit, not revenue, profit, because of how much revenue they turned away typically. Now they're able to take that. We've also had guys, like, I'm not going to throw this guy out there. There's somebody who is a top chief revenue officer at one of the large players in our industry who is thinking about leaving and joining our service and starting their own business under Swag Space. Anyone can start their business because we do all of the back end work and we're giving you all the front end technology, and it's for free. So people who really want to be entrepreneurial and start their own thing for free, instantaneously, you can sign up and make this happen.
So thinking about this on an SEO kind of front, and not just SEO, but just kind of differentiating yourself in the market, you said you're at like 100 users at the moment, and I'm assuming this will grow. How would you allow the individual users to market in any sort of, you know, distinguishable way, as opposed to everyone having cloned sites with maybe a different logo in the corner? I know that with most print shops, they have like regional traction and regional searchability. And so they wouldn't want to lose that by throwing it into like a new domain where basically all the SEO matches 100 other users.
Yeah, totally. It's not. So it wouldn't work that way. All the browse catalog, we don't allow it to be pulled by Google at all, for your exact reason. We don't want all these sites to be cloned. Only the homepage is SEO-ified, if you will. That's the only page that could be, and that's fully content. You're writing your own content and your text. It's templatable, but it's your own content and text. That's frankly, the only thing that can be pulled by Google. All the catalog cannot be. Jenny Promo in the Midwest, who has a screen print shop, she can also have her own domain, which has all the SEO, and she can write her own blogs and all those different things, and have a shop swag button that opens up to the catalog. The catalog's not, you know, coming in Google searching. So it wouldn't have anything to affect Google rankings, positive or negative. It just wouldn't affect it. It would be every company does their own SEO. Every company has their own site. Every company has their own domain. But we are the tech, underlying tech that allows the processing and the transactions to happen on one site.
Very cool. So with you guys having to also essentially farm out the final production, what does that do on cost? Where, like, we're trying to keep 30%, you're obviously trying to keep some percent, and then there's the actual production cost. Does it make these products like blatantly more expensive than if I just go through like my ASI network?
No, not at all. So every single price on the site is vendor recommended MSRP. So if you went to PCNA or any of these suppliers that everyone buys from, and you looked at their site and said, what does the vendor recommend that you sell this mug for? That's how much it sells on our site for. And by the way, you can get promo codes and discount it if you want to give your clients a better deal. Mm-hmm. That's the exact price. The reason why it makes sense is very simple. If you're Jenny Promo and you're doing $500,000 a year or $1 million a year, or even $5 million a year, you have a certain level of buying power, right? And it changes. If you're doing $5 million, you get better buying power and better pricing than if you did $1 million. We're doing $600 million plus. So as you can imagine, the customing network of buyers, we have much better pricing than anybody else that we're talking about here, because we're helping out the small guys. That's the whole point. We're helping out the screen printers. We're not necessarily replacing 4imprint. We're not replacing Bamco. I mean, Halo and Bamco, these behemoth companies. That's not who our target is. Our target is giving the little guy the technology of the big players. That's the whole point. So if you're a screen printer, by nature, you're doing under $100 million, we have better pricing than you. If you're doing under $600 million, right, we're doing better pricing than you. We could give you the same profit and still make not so much, but we make a certain percentage of every single order, and it makes it worthwhile for us that if we become, this is kind of the big vision, if we become the tech layer in between all the promo distributors and the screen printers and the party planners and designers and all these people and the suppliers, we become that tech layer and we're the ones funneling all the orders to the right people, we could be doing billions of dollars worth of revenue. I mean, think about it this way. There's 23,000 promo distributors. The average promo distributor is $500,000 to $1 million a year. Okay, 23,000. If we get 1,000 of the 23,000, that's $500 million to $1 billion of revenue funneling through our system. That's not talking about screen printers, the 20,000 plus. That's not talking about the 70,000 event planners. That's not talking about the 100,000 plus designers that might want to add a new revenue stream. That's not talking about the college kid and the stay-at-home mom and dad who want to – just talking about 1,000 of the promo distributors out of the 23,000 using our technology that's for free. And that's 20 times better than the current process they're dealing with. And they'll make more money and they'll have way more free time to do whatever they want, whether it's make more sales or take a vacation. We allow them to do exactly what they want and make more money. That's kind of the beauty of it.
So this might be a little bit controversial, just knowing screen printers, knowing custom ink. When screen printers hear custom ink, it hits their ears differently, right? I'm not sure if you know what I'm talking about. So how are you planning on like tackling that? Because that is like going to be a big pushback when you are approaching screen printers, because screen printers are going to feel threatened by what you're doing.
That's a good question. And honestly, I didn't know there was any sort of animosity at all. Honestly, I would say 9 out of 10, even more, 95% of people we speak to have no issue with it. There are a few people here and there that bring it up. So I haven't had to really say anything. At the end of the day, the goal is that Custom Ink is acting as a supplier. We're not ever going to go after anyone's clients. That's not the point. Like, if we did that, if we ever took screen printers or party planners or designers or promo distributors' clients and we reached out to them, our business would be done. It would make no sense. Mm-hmm. It's very, very separate. They're completely different divisions. Just like swag.com is a completely different brand and business than Custom Ink. Custom Ink's our own thing. We happen to be under the same umbrella, but we're going after different demos. We have different processes. We have different brand. We have a different voice. We have different tech teams. All these things are different. How we think of Swag Space is we're like a small incubated team underneath Custom Ink. We're developing what we think is the right thing to allow our clients, the Swag Space users, the members, the distributors and the party planners and the screen printers, the ability to easily sell swag and make a lot more money for them. That's the whole point. That's it. You know, I've had this idea for 8 years. It's a passion project for me, frankly. You know, I have a lot of friends who are in the industry. I have a lot of friends who have seen how complicated it is and how much they can't grow. And as you said, Cole, people are stuck at the $2 million for 10 years. A lot of people are stuck at the $500,000 for 10 years. It's hard to kind of make money in the space because it's so much human capital and so much manual processes. We remove that. I really honestly believe if you dive in and you use our technology and you allow us to train you and how to best use it, you'll triple your sales. I really believe that. And I've seen it firsthand. You know, we went from $350,000 to $1.1 million going from 2016 to 2017, just me and my co-founder Josh. Nothing changed except for we had a small technology platform that allowed us to streamline things. The site is infinitely better, $10 million plus invested in the platform since that point. I think if people really use the site at their advantage. And by the way, it's not just like Jenny Promo has a site and she could share with her client and her client could check out. They could do that. Fine. But let's say the client doesn't want to check out through your site. Let's say they still want Jenny Promo to do the work for them. They still want to do it manually. We've developed tools where Jenny could create a presentation deck in seconds. No more designers needed to create a deck and share that deck. Jenny Promo could create the cart in seconds. Gavin, imagine I'm talking to you and you're saying, I'm looking for a notebook, a pen, and a mug, and you don't want to deal with it. Jenny can literally press a button. I'm making a cart for Gavin. I'm finding the notebook, the pen, the mug. I'm uploading your logo. I'm mocking things up. I'm building box. This stuff takes seconds. Click a button, create the cart URL link, share the link with you. You now have everything priced out, timed out. Everything is in your cart. All you have to do is check out. You could delete the products. You could add new products. What that does is it gets you 90% the way there, right? What's doing 90% of the work for you? Ultimately, you're going to check out by your third or fourth order. You might not need Jenny to do the work for you, right? You're going to do the work for yourself. You're going to go to your My Orders page. You're going to see all your order history. You're able to easily reorder. You're going to find new things. You're going to buy things. I know this works because this is exactly the playbook that we did at swag.com. 50% of our clients don't want to check out through an e-commerce site, right? They want our team to help them. So we help them and we do it really efficiently and really streamlined. But what happens is on their fourth order, they don't need this anymore. They start doing it themselves. Then it becomes an automated experience for everybody.
So on that customer service front, and I don't know if we're running out of time because I know we're running over, but on the customer service front, because we, you know, we're so used to a level of control where like it's a 48-hour rush and I can literally decide, yes, I'll run overtime. Mm-hmm. How do you guys manage the customer service side? Because in a lot of ways, the new web store that I would open is mm-hmm. just kind of not controlled by me at all. I'm essentially just mm-hmm. an outside sales rep. So how do you handle that customer service side when the salesperson might want to make it happen? Sure. But they have no idea what's possible.
Sure. So I would say I want to separate the mindset for a second. If you're talking about apparel because you own the print shop, you could mm-hmm. obviously override things and make it happen. But yeah. if you were going to offer a promo today, you lose that control anyways, right? You don't have the control. If you want to offer notebooks, pens, and mugs, you're relying on whoever else to do it. So it wouldn't be a difference. It would just be you're adding a new offering, and that comes with the new offering that you don't offer, having to rely on other people. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you could add your own intercom live chat to the site. So we have this feature where you could build a live chat and you could communicate with your clients. Your clients will see the exact in-hand date at the time of checkout. If they need it sooner, they'll say, hey, Cole, I need it sooner. You'll get pinged to your phone or somebody on your team will get pinged to the phone. You could say, let me check on that for you. You contact our team. You say, hey, my client needs it August 4th. The in-hand date is August 8th. Can you make it happen? Our team will respond within 20 minutes to let you know, and then you can respond to your client. If you say Got your it. Client needs it by this date, we could override it for you. But what's cool is we are going to be so connected to you guys that it's less about you reaching out to the PCNAs and whoever and having to wait on hold or hope that they get back to you. Or if you're dealing with seven different products, having to call seven different vendors, you deal with us. We are your de facto supplier. So if you say this kitted box that has all these 20 products from different vendors, you need to get it done faster, speak to one person and we handle it for you. But in general, there's always going to be the solution where you can't just override it because you're frankly not making this stuff. It's somebody else making it. Apparel is a little bit different.
So art, I'm just curious because I run an art business. Our business is we have graphic designers and we are the art department for screen printing shops. You guys handle the mm-hmm. art. Like what do you guys have human combined with technology? What's you guys' process?
Sure. So we don't create any logos for people. Obviously, you know, people come to us with their predefined logos already. But yeah, we have a whole human team. We have a large human team. I mean, Custom Ink has over 1,000+ employees. So if there is a low-res logo that happens, right, people upload a JPEG file, but obviously you want to print with a high-res vector AI or something, our team will convert the file and make it perfect. And then we'll create a mock-up that gets sent to the client or gets sent to you first to approve before we ever send it to your client to make sure it looks exactly right before we start.
Gotcha. Cool. That's good.
So I wouldn't be in the middle of that at all. So I could actually manually enter an order to the store that I've opened.
Yep.
And then you guys are now in charge of my mock-ups. You're in charge of my
everything,
my
art everything.
Output. Wow. Yeah. You guys are going to be very emails, disruptive.
All the emails that ever get sent to your client are fully white labeled with your logo, your brand color. So no one sees Custom Ink. No one sees Swag Space. No one sees swag.com. It's
and they're automated. So I'm not in the middle of it.
Nothing.
Hey Jeremy.
The only thing you have to do is we have this ability and you could turn this offer on if you want, but how we designed it is let's say Cole Facebook checks out through your site, right? Mm-hmm. We transact the order. We collect the sales tax. We remit the sales tax. So you have to deal with that anymore. We give you your portion of the order. You get to keep track of that exact amount in your dashboard and you can withdraw it whenever you want. Fine. we create the virtual mockup. We send you the mockup first, Cole. You click on it in your dashboard, very simple. If it looks good to you, you say looks good, it then automatically generates a white labeled email that gets sent to your client to approve. Only when your client approves it do we get notified and we start production. If you get the mockup first and it doesn't look good to you, let's say it's 5 inches versus 6 inches, you're like, I know my client, they don't like this. You can request revisions, it gets sent back to us, we revise it, we send it back to you. Only when it looks good to you, all you do is boom, 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 accept, get sent. That's
it. What's the timeline on those revisions?
Usually about 12 hours from the time the client orders the process to get it to you, and then revisions could happen within 10, 20, 30 minutes. I mean, it really depends.
Plus, if they're uploading, I'm guessing you just have a normal like template designer anyway, right?
Exactly,
so,
right.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, Jeremy. So you are an entrepreneur, probably high level entrepreneur,
yeah.
Right? And a lot of the folks that's listening to you right now are entrepreneurs, and you know that lifestyle is peaks and valleys, right? What have been some of like the hardest things that you've had to face as an entrepreneur? And how have you been able to like keep going and to get where you are right now?
Yeah, I think I would say entrepreneurship is a very lonely sport if you think about it, because you're creating the future and it's all in your hands oftentimes. You know, you might have a partner here, a co-founder, but oftentimes you're doing it by yourself or with one or two other people. It's a very lonely thing. I've had my fair of failures for sure, like everyone has, and I failed and have had some successes here and there. I think the most you could do, because you're always going to get down, like whenever something doesn't work out, especially at scale, you lose millions of dollars, you cost people that have trusted in you money, they're investing in you. It's definitely very hard, right? But the only thing you could do is learn from it. That's really it. There's like that famous quote, you win or learn, right? That's like the line. Like not every single business is going to succeed. That's fine. It doesn't always have to. It's not meant to, right? 9 out of 10 companies fail. But as long as you learn from it and you make the experience the next time better, you give yourself better odds. I think it's only the only thing you could do. So I hang my hat on that. You know, in Vouch, I spent 3 years of my life. I burned through a lot of my own personal savings, like most of my own personal savings. By the time Vouch failed, I lost a lot of people, a lot of money, and I was 30 years old and I was single and I had no money. I had less than $20,000 to my name at that point. And then to start swag.com and now build it into, you know, multiple millions of dollars, you have to have the mentality that just as your wins, like right now, I don't think of myself as a winner or like that I won. I think of myself as an entrepreneur and I might have my next business might fail or hopefully it succeeds. But like you can't define yourself by the business that you're in. That's why I think a lot of entrepreneurs, it's so hard not to. Like your life becomes your business and every conversation becomes your business and people look at you like it's your business. So much so like with swag, I mean, how many times do I get introduced as, oh, I'm the swag guy. Oh, I'm this. Like it becomes your life and you kind of – and then when I gave up the swag CEO role to now do swag space, it's like, oh, you're not doing – like I think it becomes people's identity too much, if that makes sense. And I think on the highs and the good times and the bad times, you kind of have to have somewhat of a level head with it and be like, you're not defined by your wins or losses. I think if you have that mentality, you're going to go longer a lot faster.
Nice. Are there any books that you read that was like your favorite book that you read that has really helped you out?
Totally. So with Vouch and tipped a little bit, I was partners with a guy named Jesse Itzler. I don't know, you guys familiar with Jesse Itzler?
Yeah, I've seen him speak. He's great.
He's amazing. And so he was my co-founder. I was very lucky. I was young. I was 25 years old. I was working with Jesse. I started a company with me and my brother and Jesse Itzler working out of his office. And this guy is unbelievable. So a little background for your audience who doesn't know him. He started Marquee Jet, private jet company, sold to Warren Buffett. He started Zico Coconut Water, sold to Coca-Cola. He's one of the owners of the Atlanta Hawks basketball team. He's ran 100 miles in one day for charity called the 100 Mile Man. He's done tons of businesses even since then. He's like built a Everesting where he rents out a mountain and people go up and down the mountains if they're climbing Mount Everest. And he does a whole thing like that. He enjoys life fully. And I remember when I walked into his office one day and he had like a pie chart on his office. This is a long time ago. And he like had different buckets. He's like, I don't know exact numbers, but like 5 hours family time, 3 hours my own time, this many hours work time. He really lived by like breaking up his time and focusing on things. And he always said to me, he's like, be where your feet are. know, like that, like a lot of people, especially now with social media and your phone, everyone's always on their phone and looking, and they're not actually even where they are. And they're just like distracted, and they're kind of wasting away through life. And they're always just like on their phone and doing things that are not necessarily important. So like he always said, be where your feet are, be where your kids are. If you're watching your kids play a sports game, be there. Stop looking at your phone. Like be in the moment and try to really digest experiences. So he had a book called Living with the Seal that became a New York Times bestseller. He had David Goggins, who's now world famous David Goggins, mm-hmm. lived in his house. This is pre-David Goggins being who he is. He had him live in his house for a month. And basically, he said to David Goggins, whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do it. That was the rule. So if David Goggins woke him up at 3 o'clock in the morning to run 12 miles in the freezing rain, he had to do it. He wanted to push his boundaries. And at this point, he was already a super successful entrepreneur. He sold Zico. He sold Marquee Jet. But he found himself very in shape, running marathons, but he found himself in a rut. And he has this amazing book that I recommend your audience read called Living with the Seal. It just puts in perspective of what it takes to reach the next level. And really what happens is, and with anything, whether it's working out or business, you're usually about 40% there. Like even at your limit where you think you're at the limit, you're pushing the boundaries, you're really only 40%. You have 60% to go. But most people don't crack that to get to the 60%. And I just took from that, and I was 25, now I'm 38. Just living your life to the fullest, going all in, pushing yourself way out of your comfort zone. You know, when I started swag.com, if you told me we'd be doing, you know, $40 million a year in sales, it sounded impossible. We were just trying to get the first sale of $1,000. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of look back after 8 years and like say, well, it was not inevitable. A lot of things had to happen, but I realized where it's possible. And now I look and say, we should be doing $100 million or $200 million or $500 million. Why can't we reach these limits? And I think that unlock only happens when you start to kind of push yourself out of your comfort zone and realize that you create a new base level for yourself, mm-hmm. right? Like now that might be impossible, but once you get there, that's now your base level. And now you have, you know, another mountain to climb.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome to hear. It's incredible to hear like people succeed over and over year after year and see how you continually wanted to have growth and a new plan instead of coasting. You see so many people coasting because they feel like, oh, I bought the house and I have some money after my mortgage. So they're fine.
Yeah. So Jeremy, how do people get in touch with you? You say you have 50 space open that you want to get new people in.
Yep.
Like if people are interested,
49 spaces.
Yeah. What's the requirement? Yeah, so, how do people get in touch with you?
Yeah, just come to swag.space. That's the URL. I know it's a little funky. Swag.space, not.com, swag.space. There's an apply button in the top right and apply. It's very simple. It takes 10 seconds. Fill out your information. Apply. Send me an email also that you came from this show, and I'll definitely give a little favoritism and try to kind of get those people in. But you can send me an email, jeremy@swag.com. I still use my old swag.com email. jeremy@swag.com and hopefully help you guys out. Once you apply, you get accepted. We have an amazing guy in our team, Joe, who will get you all set up. He'll help you set up your entire account. He'll train you. He'll give you videos and how to best use the platform, everything. He'll like get you up to speed, become an expert. And then even more so, this is actually a promise that we actually do. If you have a customer that wants swag and you are maybe in the early days and not sure how to sell it, invite Joe to your meeting. Make Joe part of your team. Joe will join your meetings that he's done this, and he'll act as if he's part of your team. And he'll show you how it's done. Because we found is after the first three orders, Cole, if you try to get first three customers and you see how Joe does it, you're going to become an expert. You're not going to need Joe for the fourth, fifth order. And for the same thing for your clients, the first few orders you do for your clients, they're not going to need you, Cole. They're going to do it themselves. So it becomes this like perfect cycle of we have to first train you and give you the tools so that you can train your clients.
Right there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You guys you have so many features that I talk to so many people in the industry and they have like these little tiny plugins that are supposed to improve. And you guys are so deep in the entire workflow that it's a really interesting thing. And I think it's going to massively shake up the industry.
Thank you, Cole. Yeah, I'm hoping it helps people. That's kind of the main thing. We really want to allow people to either streamline what they're already doing, or if they don't do it today, have a really simple way of getting involved and doing it and making it profitable and making it enjoyable and not adding tons of stress. Like this should be a major stress reliever and take a lot of the stress off the plate and allow you to make more money. That's kind of the goal.
Great. Well, I mean, thank you so much for your time. We could talk to you for hours, but I'm sure you got to get going. So thanks again for talking with everyone. And yeah, we'd love to talk to you again in the future, maybe in 6 months. Thank you to everyone for listening. Please like, subscribe, and tell your mom about us. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.